From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Between hurricanes, wildfires, and earthquakes, this fall has been a bit overwhelming on the natural disaster front. The unusually warm weather seems to have added to the unsettled feeling here in New England and has a lot of people talking about climate change. That includes us. This hour, it's the science of intense hurricanes and mega fires. Also, what officials at the EPA are doing to keep that science out of the public eye. Finally, we'll lighten up with a little nod to Halloween and the amazing camouflage abilities of the octopus. First, it's been exactly 5 years since Superstorm Sandy slammed into New England. The storm caused a whopping $65 billion in damage. That's billion with a B as in boy. Made it second only to Hurricane Katrina. At that point, it was completely unprecedented for a storm like that to hit New England. After what we've seen of this year's hurricane season, it might just seem par for the course. With both hurricanes and wildfires, which we'll hear about later this hour, the damage they cause is largely determined by how and where we choose to build. But when it comes to the storms themselves, climate change may be playing a role. Well, just how big a role, though? And how certain are we about that? Joining me now is Cary Emanuel. He's the Cecil and Ida Green Professor of Atmospheric Science and co-director of the Lawrence Center for Climate Science at MIT. He's also newly elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences this year. Cary, congratulations on the honor and good to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
How much has our understanding of the relationship between climate change and hurricane activity changed in, we'll say, the last 5 years since Superstorm Sandy?
Well, I think we're getting more confident in certain conclusions about how climate change will affect hurricanes. And yet there's still a lot of work to be done. So the things that everybody agrees on is that as we warm the climate, the incidence of very high intensity events like Irma and Maria and Harvey should go up in most places. And very importantly, the rainfall that comes from hurricanes should go up quite quickly.
You didn't say, though, that the number of hurricanes would go up. That's been an area of some debate, right?
That's right. But it's actually, curiously enough, not that important. So what I like to emphasize is the number of intense hurricanes is supposed to go up. The number of weak hurricanes may indeed go down, but weak hurricanes are responsible for a relatively small percentage of the destruction. So from a societal point of view, we're not so worried about them. But within the science, yes, that's very debated about what will happen to weak storm numbers.
To your point about there being a greater proportion of strong storms, I mean, we've already heard a lot about the potential, you know, role of warmer waters, warmer, moister air on individual storms like Harvey, Irma, Maria. But those storms that we can all, you know, rattle off at this point were part of a larger string of 10 consecutive hurricanes in a 10-week period this year. That hadn't happened in at least 124 years. And I understand there's some debate as to whether or not it actually happened 124 years ago, because at that point, our record keeping and detection of storms was such that there may have been intervening weaker storms that didn't get counted. So how significant should we see this string of 10 hurricanes in a row? And how much of a role do you see for climate change in that?
Well, I think it's very important to emphasize that when you get much back before 1970, even in the Atlantic region, the data just gets very poor. So it's very hard to discern records or long-term trends from the data just because the data is poor. But when we look at storms like Harvey and Maria or the string of storms in the Atlantic season, we like to look at how the underlying probabilities are shifting according to very basic theory and to some extent models. And so whenever you shift a distribution, you start seeing relatively large percentage changes in the extreme wings of the distribution. So Harvey, you know, might have been a 1 in 100 year event, rain event for the state of Texas in 1990, but we think it was already down to about a 1 in 20 year event this year, and it will go down to maybe a 1 in 5 year event by the end of the century if we don't do anything to curtail greenhouse gases. So we look at how the underlying probabilities change. We don't like to focus too much on individual events.
I'm talking with Kerry Emanuel of MIT. He's a meteorologist and climate scientist specializing in hurricanes. Some of the impacts of climate change, things like heat waves in the summer, those are pretty clear cut. But discerning this effect of warming, whether it's warming oceans or warming air, on hurricane activity levels, as you mentioned, it's been an area of some uncertainty and some debate. Why is it so difficult to nail down what that relationship is and what we should expect going forward?
Well, I think the simple answer to that is we measure temperature all over the planet many times a day. Hurricanes are rare. You have to compile a very long record, and it must be accurate, sufficiently accurate, to detect things like trends. Now, I'd have to say that the theory and the models are now strong enough that even if we had no records at all of hurricanes, we would be concerned. And we have to treat this as a problem of risk assessment and not as a problem of signal detection.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so there are a lot of people who, quite understandably aren't, aware of the physics of hurricanes and the basic theory, who say, well, I want to see with 95% confidence a signal emerge in the records of storms. And if you want to wait for that level of confidence, you're going to have to wait a long time for most metrics, just because hurricanes are so rare. If we wait that long before we act, it's going to be much too late to act. I think we have to use all the available information we have, not just observations, but theory and models, if we're going to do a proper job in assessing the risk.
You're a scientist working in a field where there's been already rigorous scientific debate. Not surprising, I guess, that you would have some strong opinions about how that kind of debate should be conducted. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt has been advocating for a climate science version of the military's red team, blue team model, saying essentially that the debate about climate science hasn't been rigorous enough to date. And you co-authored an op-ed in the New York Times a few months ago opposing that idea. What do you see as being fundamentally different between the red team, blue team model of debate and the kind of debate that's already been going on in the scientific community?
I think climate change has probably been, within the scientific community, one of the most thoroughly vetted problems in modern history. Science is after the truth. It doesn't take political sides. The problem with the red team, blue team approach is it explicitly injects politics into what should be a scientific discussion. Who picks the teams? Not scientists. People like EPA administrators pick the teams. And they're picking the teams in such a way as to turn it explicitly into a political debate. Well, that's horrifying, to be frank. It's fundamentally a science debate. What we do about the climate change problem, of course, that is a political debate. Nobody's proposing red teams and blue teams for that. That's the debate that society really should be having at this point. I mean, we should move beyond debate about climate change per se, whether it's happening, and move on to a much more productive debate about what we're going to do about it.
Well, as you've watched the politicization of climate science, not climate policy, I mean, you have in the past been rather vocal about the fact that you are a conservative little C Republican and a climate science, that you see no conflict there. And you've already said you would like to see us acting on this. You think we have enough science and the risk is great enough that we need to do something about climate change. What kinds of policies or what kind of political debate would you like to see happening on that front?
Well, one point of clarification, for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been officially a moderate, or rather an independent rather than a Republican. But your broader point is valid, that within science, most of the time we have no idea what our fellow scientists' politics are, because we're not in the business of talking politics. We're in the business of doing science. And I would be shocked and very surprised if there was any correlation between somebody's science and someone's politics within the field of science. But the debates we should be having are how are we going to transition to a carbon-free energy economy? And the thing that worries me most as a citizen is that the transformation globally of the $6 trillion annual energy market away from carbon is now being led by China, demonstrably. And the United States has decided to sit it out on the sidelines. And I don't think we can afford to give up that market. I think that would be very bad, ultimately, for the economic health of the United States. So as a citizen, I think we should get back into that whole debate about how we're going to transition the energy market.
Do you see any risk as a scientist in making those kinds of statements and wading into the political side of this debate rather than sticking with just the science of climate change?
I don't think that science should disqualify a citizen from exercising his rights as a citizen. And I don't think any profession should do that, actually. I mean, if there's one profession that you might consider putting a hold on, it's lawyers. Should the same people who are practicing law be making laws? But that's the situation right now. No, I don't want to have my hands tied as a citizen because I'm a scientist. So I think, on the other hand, that when I offer opinions, they should be on a subject that's well informed by the work I do, and I hope I've restricted myself to that.
That's Carrie Emanuel. He's the Cecil and Ida Green Professor of Atmospheric Science at MIT. Carrie, thanks so much.
You're welcome.